Jonathan Howcroft, Halftime's dual international, for the new Golden Herb Schnitzel Sub from Subway.
And he's coming this afternoon with his Manchester United top on and the new number of Bastian Schweinsteiger. He's a very happy man. Hello, JP.
Good afternoon. How good a name is that?
It's a great name.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Schweinsteiger. You got to go.
And Morgan Schneiderlin.
Schneiderlin, I like him
same
too.
Same day.
Well, you'd be happy.
I'm always happy.
Are you happy with
always
it?
Always happy. Am I happy with those signings?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. Yeah. United haven't had a proper midfield, had any proper midfield depth for about 10 years. And they've either skirted around the edges of resolving that issue or they've bought players who haven't worked out. They offloaded a guy a couple of months ago called Anderson, who they bought for an awful lot of money in about 2007-08 kind of time, and he should be the star midfielder now, but he ate way too many pies. And one of those few professional footballers who genuinely had a double chin. Like, it wasn't,
right.
He wasn't just, you know, sometimes players can get picked on for looking overweight. Frank Lampard's a good example. The England midfielder was often had the mickey taken out of him for being a bit heavy. He wasn't. It was just the way his body kind of sat. He was
big boned.
Yeah, kind of. A bit angular, the way it all kind of sat on him. Anderson had a double chin and would play and especially with the new modern kits, how slim fitting they are. Dear me. Professional footballer. And on crazy money, you know, like £70,000-£80,000 a week. Just
a week.
Makes you sick.
Imagine that.
Oh, dear. I don't think I could. I literally don't think I could conceptualise what that was like. So, yeah, great. He's good for United. He is old.
How old is he?
Schweinsteiger is 30.
How old is Schneiderlin?
Schneiderlin's 25.
Oh, he's all right.
So he's a good age. But so Schweinsteiger isn't a guarantee.
Can you say that again?
Schweinsteiger.
Thank you.
He's not a guarantee. And Bayern Munich wouldn't have let him go if they thought he was worth a place in their first 11. So they are buying a good footballer, but at his age, there are no guarantees.
Right. So whilst you're very happy with it, because of the quality he brings and the coverage he gives through the midfield, it's not going to be a long-term
No. But what he brings more than anything is character. And this is, again, something that United have lacked. And Melbourne Victory are a really good example. You look at the signings that Ange Postecoglou and Kevin Muscat have made. They've bought character. You go through the spine of their team. There's leaders in every position. United haven't had that for 3 or 4 years as various players have come and gone. You look at the captain. Wayne Rooney shouldn't be the captain of Manchester United. It's the lack of alternatives that means that he is the captain. And now you've got Schweinsteiger. They're going heavily after Sergio Ramos, who is a leader in Spain and at Real Madrid. He'll bring that kind of...
Is he in town for the ICC?
He is. He's in town right now. So that's a good direction. I'm happy they're going in.
Right. Because as soon as you mentioned players with double chins and who got picked on with their weight, I immediately thought of Wayne Rooney early in his career.
Yeah.
They had a crack at him, didn't they?
Oh, he's got he does. He will always put weight on quickly. He's the kind of player that will have to work hard in the off season not to show. And you look at pictures of his family. I know there's an incredibly unflattering picture did the rounds a few years ago of him walking out of the sea with his dad. And they have those rounded shoulders that don't help in these kind of situations. And
nice square edge is handy here.
Yes. He doesn't have those angular flanks for the...
Angular flanks
for the body to hang everything off. And understandably, opposition fans nickname him Shrek. And you look at that kind of picture and it's, the family Shrek.
The family of Shrek. And just done before we leave that, we'll get to Tommy Wren very shortly. The price tag for Mr. Sterling?
Yeah, it's the price of football. And there's a premium in England because of the homegrown regulations that UEFA have brought in, which means that you need a certain quota of English player. Look, to me, it doesn't matter. The Abu Dhabi royal family have got so much money, they're going to have to spend it somewhere, aren't they? I can't conceptualise £70,000 a week How am I supposed to conceptualize $10-20 billion? You know, it's crazy.
That's a fair point.
So, yeah, it's the cost of doing business. And they've bought, for my mind, the best young English forward that's going around. And if it costs 49 million, then that's what it costs.
49 million poons, isn't it?
That's yeah, poons. Of which 10%, I think, or 20% goes to Queen's Park Rangers, the club that Liverpool bought him from.
Oh, okay.
So I think there's an inflation on... natural inflation on that price because they had to factor that in as well.
All right, that's the update from that situation. There's another situation unfolding in Adelaide, of course, the private memorial service for Adelaide Crows coach Phil Walsh. Tommy Wren is there. And there's no media access to this, as we've told you before, but with, there's a lot of people that are still... coming to grips with the loss of Phil Walsh, the football community, and plenty of those are in Melbourne and listening to 1116 SEN. And let me just check in and just see what the vibe is there with Tommy Wren, who's one of our very, very fine friends here on the program. He joins us this afternoon. G'day, Tommy.
G'day, Half. How are you, my friend?
I'm going all right, mate. Going all right. I imagine there's a fair few people streaming through the gates of the Adelaide Oval at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, about 1,000 people expected here. It is a private memorial, as you say, Half, but a lot of the heavies clearly have banded together, united, I suppose, in their grief for the loss of Phil Walsh. And I just saw a moment ago Eddie Maguire walking with Nathan Buckley. But delegates here from Essendon, Richmond, the Western Bulldogs, you know, all the clubs are represented here today. The AFL, of course, by Gillon McLachlan. Mark Evans is over here as well. Travis Auld has made the trip west to Adelaide as well. So, look, there is no doubt a lot of people here, and clearly all of the Port Adelaide and Crows players are here today. They're the two most recent clubs that Phil Walsh had worked with and had touched the lives of so many. So you're right, it's going to be a very sombre affair. The service begins at 3:30 your time over there, Half, so about 20 minutes or so away from that. It's expected to go for about an hour. And I think as much as anything today is as much a celebration of the impact that he had across his 32 years in the industry. So I think a lot of people, you know, we'll share some pretty difficult moments in there, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of great stories exchanged as well. And, you know, the healing process in a way can start to begin, hopefully.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you, Tommy, in light of the fact that the Adelaide boys got their first match under their belt last week post this tragedy, and the fact that there is a showdown coming this week, which we discussed on Monday. You're all pretty tight with some of the Adelaide boys and the Port Adelaide boys as well, the guys in footy over there. Do they see this as an opportunity to really let that grieving process start to get to a point where they can get on with their life?
No doubt. I think that's exactly right, Half. I think everyone has been extremely mindful, and for a lot of people that were close to him, and, you know, those players were very close with him, I think that healing process, you know, Half, we've all experienced grief to a point, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have, but for many of them, it will take months, some even years, to be able to reconcile, you know, what's happened in the past couple of weeks. But I think there is a point as well where they realise, you know, Phil would want us, harsh though it is, he'd want them to play football, and that's their job. That's what they're there to do. And I think Travis Boak said yesterday, they're united, or a couple of days ago, they're united in their grief, the two clubs, like never before. But I think when they get out there and they actually play the game, they'll play it as tough and as aggressively because they know that's what Phil would have wanted them to have done. And I think there is an element of we need to move on at some point as well. And I know that may sound a little callous, but there is that element that we need to push on and we need to be able to begin that healing process.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's callous at all. Tommy, I think there's different ways to get through your grief, and they'll certainly won't forget what's happened to their coach and to a guy that spent so much time with them. But as you say, that there is another day coming, and you've got to get ready for that as well, as not just looking back in the past. So that's what this opportunity does, give them a chance to do, to celebrate the life, tell some stories, to feel good about that as they say farewell to him, and then take that forward for the rest of their life and their careers as well. So that's, I think, what today represents for the players. Of course, the family and the friends will still be grieving heavily, Tommy. Difficult to comprehend what they're going through. Just from a footy sense, before I let you go, is there anything mooted for this Sunday, for the showdown, in terms of a tribute to Phil?
Look, one of the things that we will see is that the players and the teams will run out together, or the Crows will actually run out a little bit earlier, about a minute before. They'll do a warm-up lap, and then the power players will come out. They'll run through the banner together, Half,
okay.
And the two captains will shake hands, Travis Boak and Tex Walker, and there's enormous respect between those two. You can just tell that they really get along off the field. And once gone, it'll be on. But yeah, I think that will be one of the things that we see on the weekend. And there might be another couple of tributes, which I think they're going to announce in the next couple of days.
Okay.
And then I think this match really is, because I know a lot of people have spoken about the Crows hosting Gold Coast next week, but I think they're going to try and do as much of the tribute stuff as they can this week, because I think a lot of people are, like you say, Half, it's such an emotional baggage. And just talking to a few of those players, I think this past 10 or 12 days has been as exhausting for them as any period in their life, because, as you know, grief can take hold. So I think they're really keen to do a lot this week, and then hopefully next week we can get back to the business of playing footy, because there are still a number of games to go in this season, you know, 7 games to go, or 8 including this week. So, you know, there is a point where everyone needs to start just getting back to the season, you know, and playing the football that Phil would have wanted them to have done.
Yep, good on you, Tommy. It's great to have you, mate. A day like today where the family and friends and the football community get a chance to celebrate the life of Phil Walsh. A lot of people still grieving the football community over here in Victoria that no doubt would love your access today and love your insight into what's going on over there at the Adelaide Oval. Thanks, pal.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Half.
Good man, Tommy Wren, 21 past 3 on halftime. JP Howcroft is with us, our dual international. We'll continue our chat on the world of cricket after the break. Aussie cricket writer Jeff Lemon will join us. Plenty going on over there in England at the moment from a selection point of view. We've got pitches to talk about. We've got Lords. We've got plenty. And if you want to have your say, 9429-1116 on the open line with JP Howcroft after this. It's the afternoon, and JP Howcroft is our man in the studio until 4 o'clock at Dual International. And, of course, with the Dual International status, he's sitting right there smack bang in the middle of an Ashes campaign. He doesn't know which way to lean. Where are you leaning?
I'm leaning towards good cricket.
Good cricket.
And we saw good cricket in Cardiff, didn't we?
No, we didn't. We only saw it from one team. And that's not good cricket. That's crap cricket. Jeff Lemon is an Aussie who's over there covering the Ashes, doing a hell of a job too, just by the way. He's been good enough to join us on the program. G'day, Jeff.
Hello, chaps. How's things?
It's going all right. Now, JP was trying to convince me there was good cricket in the first test. Are you on my side or his side?
Absolutely on your side. It's not good cricket if the match finishes in 4 days.
Well, that's true. And one team pantses the other. It could be a really dramatic four-day test match, but when you're getting pantsed, that's not good for us. Certainly not good for cricket.
No. No, it was about 70-30, I think, in terms of rubbish versus gold. So we'll be looking for a bit more of a contest at Lords.
Jeff, talking about Lords, the two big pieces of news that have come out have been Brad Haddin won't play for personal reasons. Shane Watson looks unlikely to play because of selection. What are you hearing from the UK about both of those stories?
Look, Brad Haddin's story, obviously really unfortunate one, that was circulating for a while before it was released that was likely to be the case. But, you know, it's not something that anyone wanted to speculate on, given it's not really any of our business. But he is out of the team. It's an interesting one. You know, only a couple of weeks we were interviewing Peter Neville at Chelmsford and saying, you know, do you have any hope of playing a match on this tour? And he was saying, look, you've just got to be ready. Something might happen, who knows? So he's into the team, and no official announcement has been made on Watson, but that's the mail that we're getting, is that he's unlikely to play at Lords. So it's changed a lot from a couple of weeks ago with Harris gone as well, of course.
Have you seen much of Peter Neville's preparation and how he's been going in terms of with his glove work, of course, and with his batting? Because he averaged 76 last season in first-class cricket in Australia, so he was pretty hot last season, but he's going to be playing as a wicketkeeper, so he needs to be pretty sharp at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. His batting's really his strong suit. I mean, he averages nearly 45 in first-class cricket, which is actually better than any of the first-class batsmen we've brought in over the last 3 or 4 years, I reckon. but we watched him play down at Chelmsford against Essex. He made 78 in that game. He looked really tidy with the bat. He's got a history of big innings in the Shield, so, you know, with any luck, that'll strengthen the batting side of things. His keeping, it didn't look great on the scorecard at Essex, but that was largely because Mitchell Starc kept spraying them 2 metres down the leg side. So,
yes, he did too.
And they weren't giving anything as wide, so he got screwed on that scorecard, to be frank.
You mentioned Mitchell Starc, Jeff. How fit is he going to be? And even if he is fit enough to play, would you still pick him, considering that there are three tests after Lords?
Look, it's a tricky one, and the Australian camp's been very close-lipped on most of these issues, as you'd expect. They're saying Stark's fine, he's bowled, we've seen him bowl at practice, and kind of wicket practice and so on, he seemed okay, but whether that means he can get through a test match is another matter. But I think they really have to play him. You know, Lords is their best chance of a result, but it'll probably be the quickest pitch, it'll probably have the most bounce. Australia has a good record there, and if they go 2-0 down here, it's, you know, history says it's basically impossible to come back and win a series from there. So if they lose this test, the series is close to being gone anyway. So I think they've got to roll the dice and throw him in.
If, as you say, there are, Shane Watson will be out of the team and Mitchell Marsh, we expect, would come in for that. And we know Peter Neville's coming in for Brad Haddin. You lose two of your 11 experienced campaigners. How does the dynamic change within the Australian team after that? I mean, two really experienced players.